Welcome to Winspiration Radio, Growth Principles for Humanity and Progress. Join us when we share information, wisdom, and ideas how to create an extraordinary future for us all. The future is open. We together decide what will be in it. Welcome to another episode of Winspiration Radio. Today, I often say it is a special guest, but this is really a special guest, at least for me. But you will, after this hour, experience maybe even a new world if you really get it, what he is teaching. I met him, or let's say I heard 2003, the first time about him. Someone mentioned him and said, wow, this is a great guy. I learned a lot of him. In 2004, I attended the first seminar. And I flew to Madrid to experience him. And I was so, blessed really call it a breakthrough, really what I experienced. Changed totally my life, my worldview, appearance of everything. I was so excited about it that I organized seminars for him in Switzerland and in Germany. And even, coaching for him, calling my mentor. He was also in the film The Secret. It was also 20 years ago. He is one of the great teachers. You can call it spiritual teacher, but he is also really a great business guy and teaching entrepreneurs, billionaires. When he went to school, they told him, you will never really read and write. He believed for a long time that he is not capable really to reading and writing. But today, he is one of the most knowledgeable person. He has written books, teaching around the globe, living on the ship of the world for years. And especially for Corona, he is working a lot via Zoom now from the ship. And he has really a blessed life. And I feel blessed that I got to know him and learned a lot from him. And in this interview, in this talk, I learned even more. And I'm very grateful. And if you listen carefully, you will get a lot of value out of it. Enjoy and learn from Dr. John DeMartini. Hi, John, it's so good to meet you again. 20 years ago, we spent more time and organized some seminars for you here. And I remember a vision you shared at that time. It says, when you leave your body, then your dream was like a satellite going round the globe and your message can be sent then from down there to the earth. In between, more people around the globe know your message, and it's a little bit overcrowded with the satellites up there. You still have the same vision or something different?
I think that with satellites today, it's happening. In the internet, it's out there. It's that people have access to it as long as it's out there. So I think that's manifested. But I think, by the time I pass, most likely we'll be traveling a bit more in space. So it's very probable that we'll be, having programs from out there too. So that's just around the bend now.
Another thing I really remember, and that is just in the modern times where the news are full of war, because of your teaching of the equilibrium, we will not have world peace as long as we are not fighting another planet. Do you really believe, or just as there must be another planet, then we can fight?
Maximum growth and development occurs at the border of pairs of opposites. Maximum growth and development occurs at the border of support and challenge. That's why even in the ecosystem and in the food chain, you have prey and predator. The prey is anabolic and builds you, and the predator is catabolic and destroys you. Peace and war, support and challenge, ease and difficulty, cooperation, competition. You need both to maximize performance. If you had prey without predator, you'd be gluttonous and fat and no fitness.
Yes.
If you had predator without prey, you'd get emaciated and starved with no fitness. But if you put the two together, they keep each other in check and homeostasis. And so we have two sides of our autonomic nervous system designed for those two things. But our amygdala wants to avoid the predator and seek the prey for survival. So survival thinking is, I want to avoid pain, seek pleasure. But thrival thinking is the realization that it's the challenges and the pains that actually innovate and create and keep things moving and evolving. So you need both. And we've been talking about, peace for centuries. And but if you look at just Europe alone, and you go and study 1,000 years, if you go online and go 1,000 years European borders, just type that in, it'll show all of the changes in all the borders of the countries and empires, and throughout the last 1,000 years. And if you think there's going to be peace, just look at that video, and that's just Europe. And if you study the Global Peace Index, which is studying 99.7% of the world's population in all the countries, and it has 23 major parameters by the brightest minds studying what is peace and war going on in the world, it maintains equilibrium year by year around the world. Some areas go up in peace, and others go up in war, and it's constantly moving around because it's necessary for growth. If you did not have anything but support, you'd stay juvenilely dependent, you wouldn't grow. If you had nothing but challenge, you'd become precociously independent. But if you put the two together, you get maximum development. And this has been known. Just like if you're trying to learn, if you get the same information, it's boring. If you get new information, you can burn out. But if you get a balance of old and new, you maximize growth, boredom and burnout. Same in relationships. If you're looking for a relationship, I imagine you're getting a girl and you say, well, here's what I want. I want peace without war. I want kind without cruel. I want nice without mean. I want positive without negative. I want generous without stingy. I want considerate without inconsiderate. I want, one-sided you. Now, if you have that as a fantasy, not going to happen. You're going to get a woman, you're not going to want that. That'll be boring and you won't respect her. When she stands up to you and challenges you and banters with you and keeps you in check, and you grow and you both grow and you appreciate each other, you don't respect somebody. So that's why you need both. But we have a fantasy, usually wounded people that are angry at people that were challenging them. They search for the opposite side in their amygdala, and they fantasize about this one-sided world. And they don't realize that the challengers are what made them independent. It's the supporters that made them dependent. You need both. So
Yes,
I'm a firm believer
I
of.
remember when you just were talking also about the private relationship. I was a little bit disappointed in the beginning when I joined the first time your seminar with you. He said, "Oh, my girlfriend is not responsible for my happiness." I thought, "Yeah, sure, she is responsible for everything, how I feel." But then to learn, oh no, it's just about the equilibrium and balancing it out, everything. And it goes,
Well, imagine if she had the expectation on you to make her happy.
Well, that's what I can try today. Yes, so much whatever.
Yeah.
It will not work. I can do whatever. It's a
No, my fulfillment is, I have control over my perception, decisions, and actions. And so my perceptions, if I'm unfulfilled, it's not because of the world outside there. It's my perception and expectation on the world out there. And I can change my expectation. And I can exchange my perception. So I'm accountable for that because then no matter what happens, I can turn it into something I'm thankful for. So I don't like to blame, have false causalities and blame things on the outside or look for credit on the outside or look for somebody to save me outside. I look for the mastery from within.
Yes, and anyway, just if we dive deeper into this, we understand more and more that we're not really seeing something on the outside or experiencing, and also everything is anyway in us. So we have more the focus and get this right. So coming back to the equilibrium on planet Earth, a lot of people at the moment, I think about, oh, so much more war and everything because the news are full of everything. First of all, what is the good in it? But is there just an extreme imbalance now in, what do you say, perception? Because the news.
There's a law of heuristic escalation. The law of heuristic escalation says that anytime an ideologue promotes an ideal, an equal and opposite ideologue creates the opposite to maintain a balance between the two. It's a balance of powers. So if we go and we look at it, let's say Israel and Palestine. At first, it appeared in the news that Palestine attacks Israel, right? And so at first, people supported Israel. They thought, we need to, they're the underdogs, so we need to support them. And then they started fighting back. And then when they started to look like they were fighting back more than Palestine originally did, then they started supporting Palestine. So the underdog always gets supported and the overdog always gets challenged in order to move those back into equilibrium. But the reality is, as there was attacks from to Israel to Palestine, worldwide, there were supports of Palestine all over, demonstrations going on for peace movements. So again, the war and the peace mechanism, if you have a narrow mind and look in one location, it looks like there's an imbalance. If you see a broad mind and see around the world, you can capture and see the pairs of opposites that are quantum entangled, you might say, across the world. And that's what the law of heuristic escalation has shown. All Heraclitus, 6th century BC, great philosopher, called it the unity of opposites. So whenever you create a position, you create an opposition, and they're always unified and they're always connected, but they may not be right in our view. So we may be subjectively biased in our local perception, but non-locally, they keep an equilibrium. So I'm a guy that's been studying, global dynamics, and if you open your eyes, it's not hard to see these pairs of opposites going on. So I don't react to either of those illusions that the media sensate. The media loves to sensate things, and the more polarized they make it, the more people watch it. So their business to sell commercial time and to sell sensations, not facts, just fictions that make you react in emotionally, impulse, and instinct. And the wisdom of the master is always transcendent to those emotive, impulsive, and instinctual responses that the masses love to respond to.
Without going into the, let's say, law of attraction, when we talk about risk or war at the moment, if you mention time before the BC time, okay, I can easily go with it. But now, in the modern times, when we say, okay, there are countries having these nuclear weapons and everything, isn't it so easy to go out of this equilibrium in this way and really risk
Well,
it? See it on a global, more universal scale, then I can understand might be an equilibrium if this planet blows up, but
there's a thing called MAD, and there's a John Nash Equilibrium, who's a Nobel Prize winner, who's in The Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe, if you remember that movie. And he created a mathematics on a Nash Equilibrium mathematics, and the entire nuclear system was set up on it. So there's a huge, there's every time there's an escalation in the capacity to destroy, there's an escalation in the capacity to counterbalance the destroying. It's going on right now in Israel. As they send rockets, they got systems to counterbalance the rockets. So we've got a mutual system of destruction going on to make sure that if all of a sudden somebody thinks they're going to get the upper hand, there's counterbalancing forces to make sure they realize, are you sure you want that? And yeah, you'd have to be really psychotic to be able to go beyond that. And of course, that's always a possibility. But our systems are set up where there's counter missiles automatically counterbalancing things to keep everything in check.
Happened, yeah.
Putin, people think, well, Putin is doing it, but Putin specifically uses that as a scare tactic, as a leverage process. But he knows if he was to launch a nuclear weapon, that nuclear weapons would come to him just as fast as they go out. So all he would do is destroy himself, and we have a mutual agreement not to destroy ourselves. So no organism is going to annihilate its reason for existence. They're going to do what they can to sustain themselves. And so the missiles are set up. The second something comes in as a balancing, it's just like crime. The second the crime goes up, there's countervailing systems come in and get more strategic and get more efficient.
But you're saying the moment it goes up, so theoretically, if we look at nuclear, it always starts with the crime and then the balance comes a little bit later.
No, the more you try to counterbalance crime, the more the criminals are now looking at those strategies to be able to build the crime. So it's not, we think there's causality between these, but they're actually synchronously acausally connected. And so there's a non-local connection between the crime and the anti-crime mechanism going on. It's kind of like, and this is what's beautiful about quantum entanglement at the physics level, at the quantum level. When you have a particle spinning one way, you get a particle spinning the other way, and they're not causal, they're acausally synchronous. And that's what goes on these larger scales. So frankly, I'm not really concerned about it because if you look carefully in your life, when somebody's been at war with you, I just met with somebody the other day I consulted with that they had a massive media attack against them, and they were sitting there going, "Oh my God, they're attacking me." And then I showed him and I stacked up all the supports that were counterbalancing it. When I got through, he was calm and he said, "I don't really have anything to be concerned about." I said, "No, you have a whole bunch of people that are attacking you, and you have a whole bunch of a small group of very powerful people supporting you. And the power of those few is equal to the drawbacks and the power of this many. And that's called the law of the one and many, the collective and the selective." So those are counterbalancing each other right now. When he saw that, he was poisoned, didn't even react to it. He was like, "I'll go about my mission now. I don't have to be distracted by illusions." So people get caught in subjective biases and they don't take the time to look at the objective whole. When they do, they don't react, they proact.
And we have partly maybe not just a possibility to see it. Like we Putin take the war, there might be some negotiations in the background with the Chinese or whatever. We don't know. We can't see. It's not in the news. So we come back to the imbalance of information. But this is all on the, I would say, material level. The law is, if I understand it right, not only on the material level. So the balancing, the equilibrium could be also on a level we not have the possibility to see with our normal perception.
Well, whatever level of seeing is where we're perceiving our reactions and our problems in the first place. So there's problems beyond our level as there are solutions beyond our level, and those things are going on. I like what Wolfram, the Stephen Wolfram says, disorder means missing information. Because of our computational boundaries and limited understanding, we see disorder. Once we have the right question to be able to reveal the unconscious to conscious, the information, we don't see a problem. And a lot of things, I every weekend in the breakthrough experience that I teach, I have people that think they got a problem. And I ask them a set of questions and they realize, "Oh, I don't have a problem. There's nothing there that I had incomplete information." And that's the same thing that goes on that makes emotions. Emotions are a byproduct of incomplete information. And love's a byproduct of seeing the whole. When you start to see the whole, you don't have a reaction. You see the balance of life. And you realize that this is a conserved game. So what we do is we go through and we freak out and we because of our reactions, and then we think we saved the world because we think we have a problem in the world. And we go around and give credit and give blame, and we all this gyration instead of actually taking the time to ask the questions and become aware. And I've been doing this for years, decades now, and people come into me and they say, "Well, I've got this problem. So-and-so's doing this." I said, I had a lady the other day, she says, "This guy's attacking me and hitting me and beating me." And I said, "Good, who's the overprotector?" She says, "What do you mean overprotector?" I said, "If there's somebody overprotecting you and you're addicted to praise and peace and protection and everything else, you're going to attract that other person to balance it. Because whatever you seek, the opposite comes with it." And she goes, "I never thought about it." So I said, "Now go to the moment there's attack. Who's the overprotectors? Who are the ones trying to support and keep you safe?" And we balanced them all out. And she goes, "I got the same amount on one side and the other." I said, "That's there the whole time, but you were unaware of it because you were having a subjective confirmation bias on the war and the conflict, and you were having a subjective disconfirmation bias on the peace. And so you filtered out that information and you thought that emotional reaction was reality. And it is your reality, but it's not what's actually there." So I made her look at that. And when she did, she calmed down and said it. I said, "As long as you're addicted to this one, you have to have that one. Because the addiction to one side of a pole of a magnet attracts the other pole of the magnet."
So this is right to say, which is the wrong identification on with beliefs or with body or in the end when you talk about addiction, because the stupid thing is we dream of something, but we do everything we don't get it.
Well, if you're searching for a monopole, one-sided pole, pleasure without pain or positive without negative, you're not searching for a goal and objective. You're searching for a fantasy. And the opposite side of the pole comes with it. And so you keep searching for that which is unobtainable and keep attracting that which is unavoidable. And then you wonder, why is it not happening? Why am I not getting my goal? Because it's not a goal, it's a fantasy. And a fantasy is anything that's not aligned with your highest value and anything that's one-sided. And anytime you expect somebody else to be one-sided or expect them to believe in outside their values. So the second you set real objectives and you embrace both sides of life, if I wanted a relationship that was all positive, no negative, I couldn't find it. If I embrace a relationship that supports and challenges that I respect, I can find that. I can create that. But many people are in their amygdala looking for a one-sided world and then wondering why the world's so tough on them. But the world's tougher on them is trying to break their addiction to fantasy so they set real objectives so they can achieve.
Did you see over the decades something change in people? Well, still is the polarities, but is it something different in consciousness, or is it different problems today?
Well, I mean, you have new technologies that give new aggravations, but all distress boils down to two things. There's only two fears. There's only two forms of distress. No, the fear of loss of something you seek, and the fear of gain of something you're trying to avoid. So anytime you're trying to seek something, you're going to fear its loss. Anytime you're trying to avoid something, you're going to fear its gain. Meet a girl and you're all infatuated with her, you're going to fear loss. You're going to be jealous if anybody comes in and tries to take her away. But if you resent her, you don't fear her loss. You hope she goes. And if you actually have a balanced orientation, you give her freedom to come and go. And that's what people want. They want freedom to be who they are, not who you expect them to be. Most people live in their amygdala all the time and they're living in survival and barely getting by and stuff because they haven't learned to master their life. They keep searching for that which is unavailable and trying to avoid it, which is unavoidable. There is an evolution, but there's still a social structure and there's still people that are ignorant. I've just been in South America. I've been in Africa in the last month. And there's extreme poverty. There are people just surviving. And they're not thinking self-actualization. They're not thinking on this level. They're thinking on how do I keep from dying and how do I get enough food to eat tomorrow? And they're impulsive and instinctual, and they're living in survival, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And those people are way more. There's about 1 to 5.2 billion people sitting there. So you got the masses that are basing survival, and then you got a few in security, a little bit fewer number. And as you go up, that pyramid gets narrower. And at the very top, there's a handful of people that are self-actualized and totally empowered people, very few of those people. There's very few Nobel Prize winners, very few Olympic medalists, very few great business leaders, very few social political real leaders, very few spiritual leaders. There are fewer in number or greater in consciousness. And it was Gaylord Simpson, and he worked on the paleontology, showed the same thing in evolution. As we move from many to one, from microorganisms to ever more evolved and complex organisms, fewer in number and greater in outreach. So that's the evolutionary scheme. The law of the one to many means as you integrate and start to create complex systems, you get fewer in number, but the complexity of all the cells inside there are equal to all those microorganisms.
Yes. Just let's make a short break.
The station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet, mix with water, and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UK Radio to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living. A people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What is your take on, everybody is talking now, the sun is sending now more eruptions and everybody will raise in consciousness and everybody will go from the 3D.
I wrote a book on helioseismology and the sun recently. Yes, there are cycles, there's sunspot cycles. They've charted them out for quite a few years now. So what we do is we take partial information, we sensate it, we scare people with it, and we look for somebody to rescue us from it. And it goes out there, and misinformation is usually subjective biased. A sign of misinformation is the subjective bias. Anything that causes zoom and boom or gloom and doom, just know it's incomplete. Yeah, it's commercial. It sells. If I told you everything is balanced, you don't give a darn. If I say the world's about to end, you're going to pay attention to the TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it sensates. But I don't pay attention. My life isn't about to, you know, even though I'm on the media a lot, I don't watch the media a lot. Yeah. That's not because I try to fill my mind with the greatest ideas by the greatest minds that have stood the test of time and feed my mind with master information. But most people don't prioritize what they read and prioritize who they hang out with and prioritize what they're doing and prioritize the way they manage their money. I'm careful about moral language because moral hypocrisies rule most people. Mm-hmm. And that means if I want to control people, all I have to do is promote something of an idealism that nobody can live by, and they'll feel ashamed and I can control them. Religions are in the guilt-producing control business in order to manipulate people with moral hypocrisies that make you feel, if I don't live this way, I'm a bad person, and then you feel ashamed, and then you go, oh, you do brain offloading of your decisions and give power to authorities. And so that's a tool. Now, the question is, if you're doing that, it's not because they're doing this to you any more than you're doing this to you.
Yeah.
So wake up, you know.
What is the you? What is the ego we created? And what is for you a soul or higher self?
Regardless of the names and language we put on it, it's the most authentic integrated aspect of our being. And we could call it the essence of our being. We could call it the essential self. We could call it the primordial ground of our being, and we could give thousands of names to it, but it's basically the core where we are centered and present and single and, you know, not distracted and divided and emotionally polarized. The true ego is nothing to get rid of. It's not something you have to destroy. It's not something, you know, even though they say it's a drop in the ocean or something, but the real truth is it's still individualized. Even it's in the ocean, it's still a H2O. And a series of H2O. So that is, there's nothing shameful about being yourself.
Well, this is also for this level of whatever self-realization or where we have materialized, we are in our body. But when I understood Yogananda right, it was also, okay, you can leave your body, but then there are even different kind of worlds or layers where you're still with your soul individualized, but then the big consciousness or the real nirvana. So we all go in the ocean and not individualized anymore.
Yeah, but the thing is if you study theology, you'll find it's a personification of astronomy and optics in most cases. Well, today we live in a cosmic web with potentially billions, if not infinite numbers of stars and galaxies out there. So our theology has to continue to expand. And we sometimes still use the languages of these ancient systems and hold on to them because of tradition and convention, instead of living with holy curiosity and continue to expand who we are, our awareness. And I'd rather continue to expand it and then see if we can weave the languages of the past into the new models and put some sort of integrated model together. No matter what we do, if we think we're going to annihilate our reason for existence and say we're going to just be disappearing, then we're basically nihilistic and say that all of this was basically for the sake of what being what. Then we have to ask the question, so now we're all one, now what? And there's a one of the most universal laws is the one of many. When you got the one, just like if you're dating somebody, if you're dating many, you're looking for the one. Once you get the one, you're wondering about the many. And so you get caught in the idea, is it one or many? Is it whole or part? Is it universal or particular? Is it similar or different? And these paradoxes of philosophy merge again. And that's why we sometimes get trapped in one model of a philosophy instead of seeing for the other side. And I'd rather keep the thing in dynamic motion and integrate and allow them to polarize and integrate and allow the thing to be dynamic. Because the second you try to make it, I'm finally done, we're now enlightened, well, then you just find out at the infinite.
Yeah, do we believe in reincarnation or not? Do we what happens if is there a soul who leaves the body and can choose another body?
When we're traveling in inner space, what's happening? Imagine we're living in inner space in 1,000 years, and we don't have an earth to die and reincarnate and come back to the earth and all that. And we're moving nonstop through south galaxies. Those models of eschatology have to be reemerged. And so you don't want to get caught too much in certain eschatologies, because those eschatologies are temporary stepping stones to a continuous expansion of awareness. Panpsychism is basically saying that fundamental to all things is space, time, energy, and matter is still fundamental to that, is consciousness. And there are people that are, going in that direction, and I think that's got some wisdom to it. If we acknowledge it and don't personify it and don't, anthropomorphize it, it got great wisdom. And I know a lot of great physicists that are open to that idea. It's not an unwise thing. But again, we sometimes personify it in terms of human constructs. We think of consciousness as what a human does, but a cell has consciousness, and a tissue has consciousness, and a plant has consciousness. Just take a single cell. So I'm a firm believer that there is a field of intelligence. It's obviously there, and there may be some sort of an anthropic principle, not designed for just humans, but for life, an inherent system to create life in the universe. There may be. Can't prove it one way or the other at this stage.
What would you suggest parents? We're coming back to Earth now. What if there is any chance to make life for kids a little bit easier, that they are not going to all this drama? Is there any advice? Would you say parents treat your kids like that?
Well, the wisest thing I know to do is something Einstein said: the greatest teacher is exemplification. So first, get your own crap together. Start living your life self-actualized. Then they will figure it out that that's how to do it. That's one. And by the way, making your kids' life easier isn't the smartest thing to do. If they don't have challenges and don't have accountabilities and don't have responsibilities, they're not going to grow up. So, I'm not telling you to drop your kids off at age 2 so you can retire at 32, but I'm saying that if they aren't given accountabilities, my dad, when I was 9, I went to my dad and I said, "Look, I want to buy a baseball glove and a bat." He said, "Great." I said, "So I want to earn some money." And he said, "Great." He said, "Have you mowed the yard?" "Yes." "Have you edged the sidewalk?" "Yes." "Have you swept the sidewalk and the driveway and the garage?" "Yes." "Have you done the hedges?" "Yes." "Have you weeded the flower beds?" "Yes." "Have you trimmed all the grass in?" "Yes." "Did you clean my shoes?" "Yes." "Did you clean your room?" "Yes." He said, "Son, I don't have anything that needs to do. And if I don't have any need for anything, I can't provide you an income. So I suggest you go to the neighbors." So I went, "Okay." So I walked down the street a couple doors down. I saw this unruly house. The hedges were not trimmed and everything. It's just a mess. So I knocked on the door and I said, "If I was to make your place look great, do all the hedges, do all the grass, the trim and everything else, would you be willing to have me do that?" He said, "Well, how much?" And I didn't know what to do. I picked a number and it was a good number. It was pretty close. And they said, "Yes." So I did all the work and I got blisters and I got bee stings and I got sunburn, but I did the work and I made their yard look fantastic. I came back. I had the money. I went out and bought a glove, bat, and everything else. And my dad said, "I see you got a glove and a bat and a ball. Well, how did you do that?" And I said, "Well, I went out and did what you said. I worked and I got some money." And he said, "Well, what did you do?" And I said, "Well, I mowed the yards and this and that." He said, "What equipment did you use?" And I said, "The equipment in the garage. He said, "Son, you can't just steal my equipment and then go out and make money off it without paying me. You got to rent that equipment." And I said, well, how much? And he said, "Well, let me calculate it." And he calculated it out, and I owed him like $5. And I said, "Well, I already spent it." And he said, "Well, it teaches you got to pay your cost. You can't run a business on paying and not pay your costs. You will be out of business." So the next time I had to do 3 more yards to get everything up to date because I had new payments to him and et cetera. And then he saw that I was making money and making less money. And because of that, I had a kid walking down the street one time, and another kid on a bicycle come by and was talking to me while I was doing the yard. And I thought, you know what, how would you like to make 50 cents? And they said, "Wow, yeah." The 50 cents in 1963 was still money to kids. Mm-hmm. So I got this one to push the mower, and I got another one to do the edger, and I got another kid to do the sweeping and raking. And I got 3 kids per yard. I got 3 groups of kids for 3 yards. I charged $5 and $9 per yard, depending on the size. I made a net profit, paid off my dad, and still end up with a profit. So I had 9 employees, and I made $45 net at the end of the day, which is around $600 a day for a 9-year-old today. And my dad said, I'm inspired. Well, you've done an amazing job. You got kids in the neighborhood working. It's keeping them out of trouble, et cetera. But you aren't saving your money. So he said, "I'm going to do a favor for you." And he got me some coin collection set, and he got me a big piggy bank that was metal. Once you put it in there, you can get it out. I still have that piggy bank from 1963. I've never been able to open it.
Mm-hmm.
Worth a fortune today if I opened it up, because it's made out of really old stuff. And my dad said, "Now that you've learned to save, now you've learned to invest, now you've learned to make a business, now you've learned how to be, you know, fruitful and serve people, there's one last step I got to give you." I said, "What's that, Dad?" And every time he gave me a step, it was always going to cost me. he says, "From now on, you're going to pay for clothing, food, and rent at the house." So I started paying him, and he said, but what you're doing is you're buying your freedom. Now you can go anywhere you want on your bicycle, anytime you want. All you have now is one responsibility: be home by 9 o'clock at night. You don't leave before 5, and you can't be here later than, it's got to be 9 o'clock. Everything else is free. You can go anywhere you want, do anything you want, have anything you want. I'm very grateful for that. He gave me accountability and responsibility. He didn't rob me of dignity, accountability, responsibility, and productivity. He didn't give me a handout. He didn't make it too easy. He made it where I was the real world. Making it easy on them is actually making them accountable.
School and whatever is not really preparing people for the real life. So your dad really taught you real life.
Yes. When I told him I was leaving for California at age 14, I told my dad I'm going to Fort California.
Mm-hmm.
He and my mom gave me a ride to the freeway to hitchhike.
Yeah.
And the reason being is when he left New York City, New Jersey area right after the war, and he was going to try to go across America. This is in the 1950s, I guess. He wanted to go into across America to go to California. And he got trapped in San Antonio, Texas, and got an engineering job there, and then got moved to Houston, and he never made it to California his entire life.
Mm.
So I told him I was going to California. He said, "Go." I never made it.
Just let's have a short break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If I remember right, the teachers told you you're not capable enough, really.
Well, my first grade teacher, she had a big book, a double stand book, and she had a pointer, and we turned the pages and it was big letters and you tried to read, you know, kind of Jack and Jill stuff. And no matter what I was doing, it wasn't working. I just could not get meaning out of words. I did not know how to spell. I spelled backwards. I wrote backwards because I had an arm and leg deformity. I had a speech impediment. I was going to speech pathologist at 1.5, and I just couldn't grasp reading. And I got put in the remedial class, and eventually I had to wear a dunce cap and face the window with Daryl Dalrymple. And my teacher got fed up with me and finally had my parents come to the school and said, I'm afraid your son's never going to be able to read or write or communicate effectively, probably never amount to thing, never go very far in life. And so I believed that until I was 17. Mm-hmm. I believe that. So I think that's why my dad wanted me to be street smart. Because at 70, they said he wasn't going to go very far in life. So he tried to prepare me for being street smart. If I was going to go and work and do landscaping and mowing yards, then fine. But let's be great at it. Let's learn how to do it wisely. Let's make sure you manage your life and manage your money wise if you're going to do it. If people are expecting fair exchange, if you're not willing to have fair exchange and you try to get something for nothing and you get entitled, you're going to get humbled. That's not how the world works. Yeah. And a lot of kids are. They don't have any responsibilities.
You were taught really to be, in the end, to be an entrepreneur, if you discovered it yourself, but he forced you this development.
I have a job because of it, because people are going and looking for alternatives.
Yes.
The drawbacks is it's making drones and making people average. Yeah. And I didn't have to go through that. I left school at a young age, so I didn't go through that pathway, and I got to an entrepreneurial pathway. I had this kid. He came to me and the psychologist was really screwing up this kid by saying, you know, you've been abandoned. You're a foster kid. Statistically, 70% of those kids end up doing this and this and this. And this kid was fed this insane stuff.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, don't listen to that crap, kid. I said, come here. And I said, you know how to do the internet? He goes, yeah. Can you get on your phone? Yeah. He says, I want you to look up something. I want you to look up famous celebrities and famous leaders that were started out as fostered or abandoned or orphan kids. And when we started looking it up, we found 700 famous people, celebrities, Sir Isaac Newton, for instance, right? All of these people went out and did extraordinary things. And so I showed him this list, this vast list of these extraordinarily accomplished people that started out just like him. You're in this category. You're in the same category as Sir Isaac Newton, Tycho Brahe, and right, and Bill Clinton, and Wayne Dyer. And I mean, and I said, all these people that had the same starts as you, they went on to do something extraordinary. That's your destiny, dude. I screwed him up really good because I shattered all his excuses.
Yeah.
But his life changed.
That's real, yeah.
He wanted to go and study and stand on the shoulders of all those people that did extraordinary things. So he started to devour all of their lives. And I told him to read about all these people because these are you.
The Secret is already 20 years old, and there's a huge market of personal development industry. You know, when we just talked here, you just sort of changed your perspective of how school is making people dependent. Is this okay when I say, or can you agree when I say, somehow this big market is also just the same thing, selling people something?
Many times it's commercial. Many times it's commercial. I can't say I support all the aspects of personal development because some of it is just victim mentality and
yes,
fantasy land stuff. I'm not going to deny that the integration of personas into the essence of being is wisdom. And the wisdom to extract out of your experiences opportunities and to see things and take command of your perception, decisions, and actions is true personal development. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But there's things that match the needs of people at different levels. So let me give an analogy of this. You go to elementary school, and in elementary school, you went to probably a time when you had chemistry class, sometime fourth grade or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought at that time that an atom was a sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a picture at the front of the class of hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, you know, went up the ladder. Each got slightly bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had this little box that had these little red, blue, and white balls and things like that and sticks to them. And you made these bonds and molecules. And you mm-hmm. believed as a kid that atoms were little balls and you built things with it. You then go to high school and the teacher says, wait, not exactly. Not exactly. You actually have a Bohr atom, and it's basically with shells of electrons going around protons and neutrons, and it's kind of a solar system looking thing. And you think, oh, well, it's sort of from a concrete structure to something a little bit more abstract, a little bit more mathematical, but you still can kind of wrap your head around it. And then you go on to college and you go, well, it's not exactly that. It's quantum numbers and probability statistics, a probability distribution of where an electron might be based on complex mathematics, which is the square root of negative one times Schrodinger's equation. So now you go, well, now we think we got what it is, but that's hard to grasp. It's really abstract. But then you find out, well, then that means an electron is a probability distribution of some oscillating vibration. But that means does it have a space and time? No, it's infinitesimal. Well, if it's infinitesimal, how can it be oscillating in time? So now we've got paradoxes sitting at that level, and it's very abstract and it's hard for us to comprehend. So we had to teach the illusion until they're ready for truth.
Yeah.
And when we got to the truth, it became more and more abstract and it became more mystical.
Mm-hmm.
And it became non-locally entangled and equilibrated and more symmetrical and elegant. So as we did that, the same thing in education, the same thing in life, same thing in personal development. There are many out there that are teaching the illusion until people are ready for greater truth. And then when the teacher appears, right, the student's ready, the teacher appears, the next level comes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bang their head against the wall with that stage. And then they go, no, there's something deeper. And then they go into the next stage and eventually get to a point where you realize there was nothing that needed fixing. There was a perfection. And all of your journey was a realization and waking up to the magnificence of who you are. And yeah. all that was your own illusions of journeys, and people were selling you different stages of your illusion until you were ready for truth. And they're doing a service by teaching you illusion until you're frustrated enough to go to the next level. And you're giving them an ability to share that. And everybody's working through their illusions until they're ready for a greater truth.
John, this is a wonderful sentence here. I like to end the interview because the magnificence of nothing is to do or to talk or to ask anymore. Everything is super great. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
For your
great
wisdom,
seeing you again.
For your openness. Thank you very much, and hopefully see you soon again.